Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great this week, Jim. How about you?
Not too bad. I had my Eagles win a Super Bowl title. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, that puts you in a much better mood, doesn't it? Plus, pitchers and catchers report soon. So, I mean, it's just everything's turning up, Jim, isn't it?
It's a great week. It's a great week. And I think I'm actually more excited about pitchers and catchers reporting than I am even about the Super Bowl. You know me in baseball. But let's get back to football. Before we get to college football, let's talk about that Super Bowl game a little bit. The game itself, hey, big win for the Eagles. First of all, showed just how much defense can control a game. That first half, especially from the Eagles defense, absolutely incredible. Don't you think, Dustin?
That was a clinic that they put on. And what was funny, Jim, is you watch that game and you're like, Kansas City's defense wasn't even playing that poorly. They did a good job of shutting down Saquon Barkley. They gave up some big plays, but like the Eagles were just so dominant on that side of the ball. I read a funny tweet that was basically like, this is what it would have looked like if Patrick Mahomes got drafted by the Bears, right? Like Kansas City's offensive line just got pushed around the entire game. So that was one of the more dominant Super Bowl performances I can remember, maybe since Seattle, Denver. And I don't remember what was that, like 2014 or 15, somewhere in that neighborhood. Like just a complete clinic put on by the Eagles, really from start to finish.
Well, if you follow the Eagles, their offensive line has been fantastic now for years. And it shows you how important that is, or the lack of a good offensive line in the case of the Chiefs. The example that we have out here, out our way, Saquon Barkley, of course, most of our listeners, Penn State fans, Saquon Barkley fans, is just look at the difference between Saquon Barkley running behind the New York Giants offensive line versus with the Eagles. And that's all you need to know about the importance of an offensive line, Dustin.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time in college football, but you see that. I mean, there was maybe not a better transaction for a running back. I guess you could maybe make the argument Derrick Henry, like outside of getting out of Tennessee and going to Baltimore, but because their offensive line, not for his entire career, but for the last couple seasons, was just atrocious. He's found a way to make it work. So it's cool for Saquon. Like, he's always been a really good dude. He's always been well-liked. And so to see him be able to kind of flourish and have an offensive line where he can actually be productive, run the football, catch the ball out of the backfield, that was a really cool thing for him. And to see him do it, in an Eagles uniform where he had in a state where he had so much success, that was another added benefit, I think. So that was really cool. And you're right. Like, offensive line makes a world of difference, especially for a running back in these days.
And also, as a Midwest guy, I'm not sure how well you know your Pennsylvania geography. He was raised in the Allentown area, which is not far from Philadelphia. So for him, that's as close to the home team as you can get. But you know what?
The only thing I know about Allentown is it's in a Billy Joel song, Jim.
I'll tell you what, we'll making a reference to music. It's good. We'll get there. We'll get there to the music and generations go reaching all the way back for the Allentown song with Billy Joel. Let's talk about the Super Bowl, because it's always so much more than the game itself. I want to actually start, though, with the announcers for this. Tom Brady, just famous, his big contract that he signed with Fox. First of all, I don't think anyone in the world watches a football game because of the announcer, which is a good thing, in my mind, a good thing for Tom Brady. I'm not impressed.
No, I wasn't either. It was amazing to me how bad he was. I think it's just not his wheelhouse. And I think sometimes maybe now I'll give it some grace because now this is a Big Ten reference here. But when Robbie Hummel started as a Big Ten broadcaster in on the college basketball side, he was not very good either. Now he's turned into like one of the most popular, one of the best in the business. That's universally kind of agreed upon. Some people still don't like him, but you're not going to please everybody. So I'm willing to give Tom Brady a second season, but good Lord, that was about as bad of a broadcast. Like, give me Tony Romo, give me Greg Olson, give me Troy Aikman, give me somebody else. That broadcast was, I think somebody said, like, he wasn't even analyzing the game. He was more answering the questions that were asked of him throughout the course of the game. And so you didn't feel like you got great analysis. And his timing was off, and it was just very clunky. Like, sometimes it's just you can't do everything. And I think Tom Brady is maybe not a good broadcaster.
And the thing is, I think this could have been very predictable if you'd ever seen him prior to this during an interview or any. I'll bring up the example when he did one of those golf competitions where they do 2-on-2.
Yeah.
And his personality just doesn't lend itself to it, is my take. Plus, you have Greg Olson, who you demoted, who does a very good job. And you say, hey, let's pay more money to this guy who's unproven at it and, you know, keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. And this is what you got.
Yeah, I think Greg Olson does an excellent job. Like, I would have much rather had him on the broadcast. Like, there are some guys that are very good at it. And I think it's because they've had that experience, like Troy Aikman. Maybe Tom Brady didn't understand. And I don't know what his preparation's like. Maybe he doesn't understand the type of preparation it takes to go into these type of broadcasts. I don't know what it was, but it was just like, Jim, at some points I was just like, just please stop talking. I know, I'm sure some of the listeners, when they hear me, are like, please stop talking, Dustin. But that was my take when I was listening to that broadcast, and which is, I feel like Tom Brady maybe would be better in one of those studio roles where it's not such instant. You have time to think, collect your thoughts, and chime in on some of that stuff. Some people are really good studio analysts, but are not good commentators during an actual game. So maybe they'll shift him around. I don't know. They've got too much money tied up into it to just like cut him loose at this point. So it'll be interesting, but it was bad. I'm willing to give him a second season. Sometimes it just takes a little bit of time to get your rhythm down in those certain circumstances. But yeah, it was an F for the broadcast team. And can we talk about this, Jim, real quick? That score bug was atrocious.
Yes, go ahead.
I'll give the people on Twitter credit because I saw this too, where somebody said Fox paid Tom Brady $375 million and had 25 left over for the score bug.
I really didn't have as big a problem as you did with the score bug because I just – to me, that is totally and completely about information. Was it giving me the information I needed? Yes. Other than that, I don't really care about it. The thing with Brady is you have to hear him. And the couple things besides the other stuff with the issues. And by the way, I think Kevin Burkhart, the play-by-play guy, he does a good job of lobbing softballs Brady's way to try to draw it out of him, but it just doesn't happen. The other issue I have with Brady is he is now part owner of the Raiders. Because of that, well, first of all, I think that's a conflict of interest and should never be allowed, okay? Just should not be allowed. It'd be like, would you put Jerry Jones on as the analyst for a football game? Of course not, because he's the owner of a team. The other part to it is, as owner, there are certain restrictions he has. He can't visit the team's practices the way other analysts can. He's also restricted for how much he could criticize the officials in the game. So these are all things that, wait a minute, those are part of the job, and he's not allowed to do it. And the most important thing, though, is, as you said, with his analysis is not analysis. You know, you'd think as a player, he was known for being well-prepared. And I assume he's doing that kind of homework but just cannot put it out there. We all saw that the Eagles were getting pressure on Patrick Mahomes. We all saw that with only a four-man rush. Well, why was it working so well? Could you give us that analysis that you as a quarterback, if that's how your offensive line was performing, what would be your take on that? And we never got that from him.
No, we didn't. And I think it makes you appreciate how good, and I'll go into, you know, some of the NFL guys, Greg Olsen, Troy Aikman, but then at the college level, Joel Klatt, and even Kirk Herbstreit, which, like, his opinions on game day aside, he's actually a very good in-game analyst. Like, when he's breaking down the plays and telling you what's happening and why it's happening, I think those guys are some of the best in the business. So, yeah, it was clunky. And the thing that really bothered me, Jim, was you were getting no analysis, especially at the end of the game. Like, I feel like some of the best broadcasters near the end of the game in a blowout are still giving you something to kind of hang on to. But Tom Brady was like, when it's whatever, I don't even remember what the score was, but let's say 34-6 or whatever. He's like, well, the Chiefs have the ball with 5 minutes to play. Well, you know, time's running out. See if they can get a score in here, get a little confidence. I'm like, Tom, the game's over. Like, what? I understand you came back from 28-3, but that was, you had an entire second half to come overcome that deficit. There's 5 minutes to go, and Patrick Mahomes is getting sacked every other play. Give us something different. And he just kept, like, harping on it. And there were times when he'd say, yeah, you're just trying to, you know, you're just playing for pride at this point. But it just felt like he didn't know what to do in those circumstances, almost like he was expecting a better game. Which I think we all were, right? Like, we expected this to be kind of a shootout, maybe like a 35-34 type of game, but it just didn't happen. So you've got to be prepared for those situations, and you can clearly tell that he was not.
And also, when the game was obviously over, the empty platitudes, and his always referring to Mahomes as Patrick, like his buddy, Patrick. So Patrick, boy, what a gamer Patrick is. Even with this, look at him. Oh, my goodness. Never giving up. Always, you know, just, yeah. Explain to me instead, you know what? The game's over, Tom, and you're quarterbacking. What are you thinking there? Legitimately, you're not thinking there's still magic here, okay? You know, and that's where, give us insight, not these, as I said, empty platitudes about your buddy Patrick. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter number one. But I'm not done talking to you about the Super Bowl. I got to ask you about the two most important things, commercials and halftime, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte, I'm Jim Galante. We're wrapping up Super Bowl week here, just getting Dustin's take on everything. And Dustin, I think, other than the game itself, and maybe even more so than the game itself, the biggest news of things, news items that come with the Super Bowl are the commercials and the halftime show. Let's start with the commercials. And, you know, the anticipation is always so great. I think that the commercials find it difficult to live up to the expectation. So was there anything, though, that caught your eye among the commercials that you said, boy, they hit the mark?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to say that I think now Super Bowl commercials, it's kind of like movies. Like, it seems like everything's been done. So you have to be super creative, super original to really get one that sticks. The one that I laughed at, it's because I have dad humor, which is hilarious because I don't have any kids and I'm not a father. what was, I think it was like an Instagram commercial or something. I don't remember. I don't remember who the ad, which makes you like, this how much I pay attention. It has nothing to do with how good the ad was. They were like, was Matthew McConaughey talking about how food had kind of, like, football was a conspiracy theory to make you hungry. And it was, I thought it was well done. But the thing that made me laugh was when they talked about Peyton Manning would say Omaha in a snapdown. And then it was Omaha steaks. I laughed at that, Jim, for probably 5 minutes, like hysterically laughed because I was not expecting that. So I don't even know if the whole commercial was good. I remember it being good, but like that part made me laugh hysterically. And that was the one. And then the, I'll give you one that made me uncomfortable, and I hope I'm not stepping on a future question. The Seal commercial.
Yes.
I thought was silly, but also uncomfortable. Like, it just was not good CGI.
No, that one, yes. It was a little bit discomforting seeing his face on the seal. And it was just like maybe a little too on the nose, you know, guy named Seal. You know, it's like it didn't come across as clever. The ones I enjoyed were the ones with the little bit of humor somewhere. Now, McConaughey, I liked that commercial. I thought the rest of the commercial was also good, besides the Omaha steaks. Was like when the start of football, we'll call it a pigskin. Thinking of bacon. And there's Kevin Bacon saying, yeah, that's good. And then do I really have to go buy refrigerator, coach?
Yes. Yep.
And he's dressed like Ditka. There's another one where they show him in the mirror dressed up as Ditka doing da bears, and it's really very good. So I think McConaughey adds to it. And at the very end of the commercial where he's talking to the woman and the woman says, you want me to make this film or whatever, she apparently is like a director, a movie director person. And I think, I can't remember what movie she just recently did, but I guess it was then Kevin Bacon on the phone who's like saying stuff over the phone and she just clicks it off, you know, cuts him off. So I thought that was funny. The other one I liked was David Beckham, where his parents tell him he has a long-lost twin who they named Other David. And he's in America, and he comes to America, and his brother is actually Matt Damon. And the conversation ends with, so you're like a famous soccer player, like Matt Damon famous? More like Ben Affleck famous. So I thought that was adding the humor, I thought was good. The other couple commercials, you know, Budweiser is always going to give you that touching, feely kind of commercial, which they did with the young Clydesdale. What'd you think of that one?
You know what? I don't know if I saw that one.
Oh.
Yeah, I might have missed that one because there were stretches when I'd get up and go get my snacks and things like that. So there might have been some commercials I missed in there.
Well, it was the Clydesdales were ready to make a delivery. They're like on the farm and there's a young one, and the handler's like, "Oh no, not, you're too young. It's not your time yet." And as the cart goes off with the big Clydesdales, one of the kegs falls off the back. And the young Clydesdale sees that, and he pushes it all the way to the bar, and he delivers it. So that was pretty good. But the one other one that, you know, kind of told the story that I thought was actually cute was for Lay's potato chips. We're on the farm.
That was a good one.
The little girl plants, you know, the potato, and she nurses it and raises it and waters it and does everything, and at the end when they're delivering the potatoes, she's got the one potato that she adds to the delivery. I thought that was a very cute one.
Yeah, I like that one too. I do remember that one, and then it kind of like came full circle because they're eating Lay's potato chips and she's just kind of staring at the bag. Yeah, that was a really well done, and that's what you have to do in the Super Bowl commercials. Like, you either have to go funny or you have to go meaningful, and I think that's always been the case. But to find that unique, like that to me was another original one where it's not something we've seen done a million times, but it's still kind of like made you smile. And I think, like, I don't know, you didn't have, I feel like there was one, I don't know if it was last year, maybe a few years ago, where you had the farmer's dog or something that just made everybody cry, where it was, I think it's like a dog food commercial, and like, well, we don't need tears during the Super Bowl, but a nice heartfelt message that makes you feel good, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if they were great commercials, but there were at least some of them that stood out a bit. I think we were on the same page with those. Okay, so Dustin, that means we get to shift to the other fun element of the Super Bowl, and that was the halftime show. A lot of people with a lot of strong opinions about it, both good and bad. I wonder if it's just based on who the demographic was that the show was aimed for, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because I had known two Kendrick Lamar songs. One of them because it was dissing Drake and everybody has heard that one. And the other one is because I cover Purdue basketball pretty intensely. And one of his songs is like their opening game on their video board, right? So that's my only introduction to Kendrick Lamar. So I didn't know a lot of his music or his songs. I thought it was a solid performance, though, in terms of like the choreography. But again, I go back to a few years ago. My favorite Super Bowl halftime show was Alicia Keys, Dre, Snoop, Eminem. I think there was maybe 50 Cent was in there, but like that was targeted for basically the 30-year to 50-year-old demographic. Like if you were older or younger, you probably didn't like that Super Bowl because you probably just didn't grow up with that level of music. But that was my childhood. Those were my teenage years. So I found it really fun. And I think that's just the same thing with Kendrick Lamar. And I'm interested, Jim, what amazes me about this whole thing, and I'm sure I used to be this kind of way too, but like, has anybody ever, anybody you get so upset about a 10 to 12 minute performance that's completely free? And then if you don't like, you can just go up and get snacks.
Well, you know what? You had me at snacks, okay? And I am definitely not the demographic that they were after. But what I found fascinating, you mentioned that you were familiar with two Kendrick Lamar songs. That puts you two ahead of me, okay?
Sure.
And there was some controversy on the Keystone Kickoff show several months ago, maybe a year ago, when I made the statement I had never in my life heard a Taylor Swift song. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
I had multiple listeners send me links to some of her songs. You can't tell me you never heard this. I'd hit the play. Nope. Sorry. Never heard it. And it's not disrespect to her. It's not me saying I'm never going to listen to a Taylor Swift. Here's my age here. I grew up, I was born in 1960. To me, the 60s music, when I was only 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, but I had older brothers. So the Rolling Stones, the Kinks, the British Invasion, that's the music that I know and like. Anything beyond 1980, I'm not familiar with, okay? So I'm a bad example. But what I would say is if I could hear the music, my father liked Pavarotti, an opera singer, okay?
Yes, okay.
I didn't, but I could appreciate the talent. Taylor Swift, so I hit the arrow, listen, okay, nice enough voice, but everything's fine. I'm okay with just, you know, not my thing. And this one, though, I got to be honest, I find it hard to find it entertaining in watching it. Now, the woman, SZA, or do you pronounce it somehow?
I've never heard of this person either.
Okay. When she sang, I thought, hey, she's pretty good, I thought. Okay. I thought that part was entertaining. But it's only after the fact. Now, I saw Serena Williams dancing. I thought, oh, she's pretty good, you know? Yeah. I thought that was sort of entertaining. But the actual music, I actually turned on closed captioning because I couldn't understand the lyrics. So I could at least read the lyrics. And I'm like, what? It didn't make sense to me either. Yeah. So now I start researching everything, and I realize this whole performance is about dissing another performer called Drake, who, yes, I've heard of him, never heard any of the music. And there's an accusation of, and I'll just say, criminal activity on Drake's part. And my thing is, like, how do you get away with accusing another human being of that, let alone doing this in front of 100 million people? And it's either, hey, if it's true, this man should be arrested. And if it's not true, you should be arrested for accusing him of this without any valid reason. So the more I learned about it, the more confused I was by it, Dustin.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And if you didn't have any background in the beef, I'm sure it was even less appealing to you. But, like, I look at it from just, like, the musical standpoint. Like, again, it's probably not my thing. I think the two songs I've heard are fine. I'm not going to go and listen to them probably on my own. But, again, it wasn't targeted for us. But it was an interesting choice for those specific reasons that you just mentioned, Jim.
Yes, it was. And the more I read about it, the more confused I get. I'm not finished with that topic. I'll ask you one more question when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show, where we're diving into everything cultural about the Super Bowl halftime show. And it's really fascinating to me, Dustin. As we finished up the last segment, I was saying I've been reading because I had no idea what this whole thing was about. And apparently there's this feud between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. And I also didn't know that when Serena Williams was there dancing, which, by the way, she was seemed very talented at it. Very good at it. That's called a Crip dance. Were you aware of that?
No. I'm as in the woods on most of this as you are, Jim.
Well, then let me school you on this, Dustin.
Okay,
I'll learn you some. Yeah.
All right.
Listen up. Well, apparently the Crip dance is named after the Crip gang in L.A.
Okay. Interesting choice.
Who would actually perform this, and apparently after they killed someone, they would do this dance afterward, which is really crazy, right? Well, what makes it so, even if you just let it go, okay, she's doing it, because there are things that take on different meaning just because it's called the Crip dance. But apparently Serena has a half sister who was shot and killed by the Crips gang. Now, she was an innocent target, okay? Right. She wasn't targeted specifically, but she was in a car, wrong place, wrong time, where they thought people in that car were involved. So it adds an extra layer to all of this. And all of this I found out after the Super Bowl. So this is all news to me, but it also makes it all more confusing to me of the path that was taken here.
Yeah, I did not know any of this. The Super Bowl halftime show should not be this deep, Jim. I should not have to think or Wikipedia or Google search anything that's happening. I should just either enjoy the music or I should not enjoy the music. And well, I don't even know, like, a Nickelback or something next year just to tone everything down. I know everybody says they hate Nickelback, but they don't. So it'd be just fine. But my goodness, like, we need something. I think we might need just something a little. The Cranberries, are they still out there? Are they still kicking? Like, we could get something a little tamer with not as much deep meaning in this Super Bowl halftime show.
Why don't we go way back and do the high school bands, Dustin?
Yeah, let's do that. That sounds good. We have like just four different marching bands out there. That sounds great.
Well, you know, I think if they, I enjoyed when they had the bands and the music that I liked, you know, when Springsteen was on, or you get the Rolling Stones, and I'll admit, even the ones where there were performers where I'm not really familiar with their work, but you watch them and you say, gee, that's, you know, pretty entertaining, yeah. Pretty good. I thought Lady Gaga put on, yes, you know, an interesting, fun show. So, you know, I'm not a complete, yeah, I guess I am an old man yelling at the clouds. So
you're not a curmudgeon, though.
Yeah, well, who knows? All right. You know what, Dustin? Here's a crazy, crazy idea. And I'm going to throw it at you, see what you think. How about if we talk about college football a little bit? What do you think?
You know what? I think that sounds like a good plan to me.
It's just crazy enough it might work. Okay.
We'll give it a try. See if people enjoy it.
Well, anyway, you and I were texting a little bit the other day and just talking about it. It's like this is the quiet time in college football, and you're saying not a lot of football news. You do a lot of coverage of Big Ten basketball, but probably the big news out here, the Penn State way, is Notre Dame is after Penn State's running back coach, Juwan Sider. Now, again, we pre-record the show. Maybe by the time you folks are listening to this, the deal may be finalized. It seems like it's going to happen. And maybe this is being a little provincial here, Dustin, following Penn State. But if this goes through with Juwan Sider going from running back coach at Penn State to running back coach at Notre Dame, this is the third lateral move among the coaching staff. Tom Allen, defensive coordinator at Penn State, same position at Clemson. Jim Knowles came in to replace him, defensive coordinator at Ohio State, coming in to take the same position at Penn State. And now we're hearing Juwan Sider leaving as running backs coach at Penn State for the same position at Notre Dame. Is this just going on at Penn State? Is it going on around the country? Why are we seeing this?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I don't know that it's only happening at Penn State, but I think sometimes maybe what happens is, especially, and Juwan Sider's been very good at his job when he's been at Penn State. Like, he's turned out a lot of and coached a lot of really good running backs. But I wonder if sometimes, one, money is going to be a factor no matter what. And I don't know whether that he would get a better deal at Notre Dame, he would get a worse deal. I don't know what the case is. Also, when you bring in a guy like Andy Kotelnicki, sometimes those other assistants don't mesh well, or sometimes the offensive coordinator wants to bring in a different guy, or whatever the case might be. So I think there's some of that organic change where, yeah, I'm going to come in and I'll run my offense, but maybe there was some clashing of heads. I don't know what the case is. I just know that when you have a staff as big as what the college football world requires nowadays, when you've got every position coach, an offensive and defensive coordinator, all these quality control analysts, not everybody's going to see eye to eye. So I don't think it's like a Penn State problem, but that doesn't mean that maybe Juwan Sider and Andy Kotelnicki, you don't see eye to eye. I don't know. Maybe the offer at Notre Dame's better. Maybe Notre Dame's been a dream job. There's a lot of different factors involved here. And I think it just adds to the fact that kids and players are able to enter the transfer portal and go wherever they want. I think that that is also translating now to the coaching staff. It's just a change of pace, change of view. I don't know. There's a lot of reasons why people like you and me will change jobs. And it's not necessarily for good or bad, but it is interesting when you talk about, and I thought, I said this too, and I don't know that this is the case for Juwan Sider because he's been at Penn State for a long time. When Tom Allen left Clemson, didn't actually shock me that much. I think it's surprising because he was there for one season. They had a chance to go to the national championship game, and then he departs. But I thought in terms of a cultural fit, like, and this is, I'm not trying to get a religion thing out there, but Tom Allen is very conservative in his faith, and that's a big important thing to him. Dabo Swinney has been adamant about that aspect of his life too. And so it seems like in terms of like a cultural fit, those two people mesh together. And that's not a knock on James Franklin or what he believes or anything like that. It's just maybe Tom Allen was like, you know what? I think I'm going to fit in better at Clemson because of the way we kind of see things. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think the Jim Knowles thing was just a complete clash of styles. Like, it just seems like there was not a lot of chemistry on that staff with him around. And then it for Penn State, why not go get the best defensive coordinator out there, right? Like, throw a bunch of money at him and try to build yourself a championship level defense. So I don't know if there's like cause for concern or if this is a Penn State specific problem. I think there's just a lot of factors. And with the mobility of players, I think coaches feel maybe a little aren't feeling that same level of loyalty that maybe they did before.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't believe there's a Penn State issue, but I do think that there's, and again, I'm going to show my age a little bit. I remember my father, he was in the same job for about 35 years. Okay. And I don't think people today think of jobs that same way with that same kind of loyalty or no mobility. You know, for my father, part of it was in a small town. It wasn't going to be easy to find another job locally, and he wasn't about to move. So I think that now, and you brought up a bit the player movement, I think it kind of filters into the coaching staff. But some of these moves, it's not necessarily a bad thing, or you're saying it's a bad work environment, but it's just not the right fit. And I think coaches are looking at that now, where they may not have a few years ago.
I think so. And I think if you look at Penn, like now, Penn State was at its best when it was able to run the football. Right. But there's also going to be more passing elements to it. And I think the other factor is that when you watch Notre Dame, like they ran, and I'm not saying they're not trying to pass, but they ran the ball extremely efficiently, extremely effectively. And like the passing game, like if that was working for them on a given day, you better watch out because you're going to get beat by 30. But it just didn't. It wasn't a huge aspect of their game. I think they've got to improve in that area. But if I'm Juwan Sider and saying, man, I get a chance to coach it, be a coach where the running backs are going to be a primary focus. This is going to be option 1, 2, and 3. And I know Riley Leonard was a lot of the reason why Notre Dame had success on the ground. But again, it just speaks to me, maybe there's an offensive philosophy that Juwan Sider fits alongside at Notre Dame more so than Penn State. I don't know that for a fact. That's just speculation, but that would be kind of my thought on that. Cause I don't imagine like the offer at Notre Dame would be a lot bigger or better than it would be at Penn State. But I don't. So it's just an interesting time, right? And there's also, here's the other aspect too. If you get, and I'm deep into basketball coverage, so I don't know what Notre Dame's roster situation looks like moving forward. But there's also could be an aspect of like, if you know what recruits are coming in, who enters the transfer portal, you might say, hey, look, I know I get a chance to coach these guys. I'd love to coach, you know, player X, Y, and Z, and they're coming through the pipeline. I'm going to take that job now so I get an opportunity to coach some of the best, you know, for these kids or whoever it might be. So I think that's also a factor when you see player movement and you may get the chance to coach some of the better backs. And it would have to be really good because Penn State's got two pretty good backs, I think. I think a lot of people would agree with that, right?
Yeah, they're not bad. They're not bad there, Dustin. What intrigues me though is the lateral aspect of the moves. When there's been rumors over the years of Juwan Sider getting offers for better jobs or coordinator positions, and he chose not to move on. So, and I would think this is a guy who, if he has head coaching aspirations, we're going to pick up this conversation though, Dustin, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten sports writer. I'm Jim Galante, and this is quarter number four of our show. And Dustin, we were when we were wrapping up the last segment, we were talking about Juwan Sider, Penn State running backs coach, apparently moving on to Notre Dame. And the part that gets me is the lateral move type of thing. And this is a guy who's apparently been so loyal to Penn State that he may have even passed up other opportunities, either for coordinator positions or even head coaching jobs at smaller schools. But also, if your goal is to get to a head coaching position, you would think that's the kind of move you make. And that's what struck me. And again, it may be all these different things converging at Penn State with being involved in a defensive coordinator going out, coming in, running back coach going out, and they're all lateral moves. And maybe it's just a case also, Dustin, I often compare these moves, even with the players, I try to compare it to our own world in private industry, where, hey, every day in private industry, people leave their jobs for apparently lateral moves when it's just, you know what, they needed to change. And it doesn't mean their current place is bad. It's just they're ready to move on.
Right. And that could very much be the case. Like when you spend a lot of time, you may just say, you know what, I want a different opportunity somewhere else. I just need a change of scenery. And that could very much be the case. The other thing that could be playing here, and this is just speculation. We don't know what the motives are unless he comes out and says. There could also be a situation where maybe he wanted the offensive coordinator job at Penn State. And so if he moves on, even though right now it's a lateral move, maybe he feels like with Marcus Freeman, he's got a better opportunity to move up and be the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Because I can see in today's college football, Jim, really any sport, whether you're an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, position coach, or head coach, sometimes it only takes one season. And if it's really bad, then you may not be an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, head coach for a long time. And so I think with a guy like Juwan Sider, I could understand not wanting to take an offensive coordinator job at a lower ranked school. Like I'm just going to throw out, I don't know where he's been potentially offered or anything, but a Northern Illinois, an Eastern Michigan, you may pass up that job because you're like, I don't want to deal with that. Like, I don't want to go 3-8 or 3-9 and then not get another opportunity somewhere else. Maybe I want to go into a program that has that has the skills, that has the potential, that has the talent, where I can really flourish and I know I'm in my wheelhouse and I don't have to build stuff up. I don't know what the motive is, but that may be part of it too, where he wants to go into a good situation and maybe he feels like, hey, if I pay my dues as running back coach at Notre Dame, you know, maybe in a few years, Marcus Freeman will give me that opportunity that James Franklin never did. And again, I don't know if that's been the case. I don't know if that was ever discussed. I don't know. That's just another layer to this whole thing as to maybe why, again, it looks lateral on the nose, but there might be some other deeper reasons as to why he's moving on.
And the other part to this is Notre Dame has to look like an up-and-coming program overall with a young dynamic coach where, you know, maybe there's a confidence level in Notre Dame maintaining this and there will be more jobs to come. And maybe it's having, he feels it will help the resume, you know, going forward. Because as you pointed out, he's leaving a pretty good situation at Penn State with a couple of good running backs. What it also, though, leads to is the question. I think there's no doubt, Dustin, we've seen what a difference a coordinator can make in a program. Okay. No doubt. Jim Knowles coming in, you look at what he did at Ohio State, what he did at Oklahoma State prior. I think a lot of people think very highly of Andy Kotelnicki and what he did at Penn State in his first year. That leads to the question of position coaches. I believe they can make a difference, but how big a difference can they make?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I'm going to word this how I mean. It's almost like I feel like they could be more of a hindrance than they could be a benefit. And what I say is that, like, when you had, like, your job is obviously to develop running back. There's people who are good coaches at this. There's reasons why Larry Johnson at Ohio State has been the defensive line coach there for X amount of years. And he was on the Penn State staff for X amount of years. Like, he's obviously very good at his job. He's very good at developing that talent. And so I think that they are important, but sometimes if they don't mesh well, or if they're not good at their jobs, then that's going to be a bigger hindrance than it would be a benefit. Because I think there's a lot of people who are very capable position coaches. And if they come down to two, Jim, like, I think we talk about the quarterback being the most important position on the field. I think the quarterback coach might be the one position coach that's, like, the most important as a position coach, as a, outside of the offensive and defensive coordinator and head coach. So I think these guys are important. I don't want to, like, downplay the significance of their job, but sometimes in some of those positions, depending on where you are, like, I feel like Penn State being the running back coach is probably very important. I don't know about the defensive backs coach, because under James Franklin, they've always been good on the defensive side of the ball, right? Like, I think with different programs, different head coaches, certain position coaches probably matter more than others, but I don't know. Maybe in Andy Kotelnicki's system, it's not going to be that important. So maybe Penn State says, you know what, we can save a little bit of money here because we know how good our running backs are going to be under a different running backs coach, and we can allocate that money somewhere else, whether that's a defensive coordinator, whether that's offensive, you know, whatever the situation might be. There's just so many factors that go into this.
And I'm also a firm believer in inertia at positions. Okay. At Penn State, the tight end position has that positive inertia, things in motion. And you know what? If you're a tight end, Penn State's probably a good place to go. They'll feature you. We've seen it. Penn State this past year had a very good in-state tight end, high school tight end, Olish, who was committed to Michigan. And funny thing, after the year that Tyler Warren had, he changed commitments to Penn State. And I don't know, and I don't want to trivialize perhaps the tight end coach, the position coach, in convincing him to come to Penn State. But it's different at wide receiver at Penn State. It's got that, you know, a body in motion stays in motion, a body at rest stays at rest.
Yeah.
Right now, the wide receiver position is at rest at Penn State, and it's hard to change that. And at running back, I think things are going pretty well. There's a pretty good history. And, oh, by the way, besides the two pretty good running backs coming back to Penn State, there's this guy, what's his name, playing in the NFL? Just won a Super Bowl. God, the name escapes me. You know, his Penn State reputation, that's the kind of thing that, again, leads to other folks coming. Now, with that said, though, is recruiting perhaps the most important aspect of a position coach?
Yes. Yes, it is. Because it's easier to coach talent, right? Like, you talked about tight ends. Like, Penn State has churned out NFL caliber tight ends on a regular basis. And that helps when you have that level of talent to work with. Now, the other part of that, Jim, is much of that is the tight ends coach? How much of that is Andy Kotelnicki's offense utilizing Tyler Warren in those situations, utilizing other tight ends in those situations? So that's a big factor. But I do think, probably more so than anything, you have to be a good recruiter if you're going to be those position coaches. I think that's the biggest thing. And so, because it's sometimes, yes, you can be, and I think Iowa's a good example where you can get some of those three-star guys and then turn them into NFL prospects. So some of those position coaches, like at a program like Iowa, probably more beneficial. And I don't want to say work harder, but it's more development-based. Whereas at some programs, probably Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, Alabama, it's probably more recruiting-based. If we want to stay competing for college football championships, we have to bring in the best players, and then it's easier to work with those guys. So then it's just kind of trying to mesh because they've already got the talent and the skill set.
And that's where I think the Penn State's ability to draw a new running backs coach who can do the job, be a good recruiter, do the things, I think it's a good place, a good position for that. What's tougher is when you've got a position – like wide receiver at Penn State. And this is where I remind people, just a few years ago, this discussion that we have about wide receivers here, it was about the offensive line. And they brought in Phil Troutwine, who had a tremendous reputation at BC, brought him in. The position coaches that I really admire are the guys who could take a position that hasn't been so good, start bringing in talent, start developing the talent that they do have. And I'm not even sure which comes first, Dustin, but that's the guy who's really valuable.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you have to have a track record of, in my opinion, you have to have some level of track record of developing guys and being successful. Otherwise, the best players aren't going to put your trust in you. So you have to have that at some level. And I think a lot of it gets covered up again. To me, what Jim Knowles did at Oklahoma State is more impressive than what he did at Ohio State, right? Like, and that's not minimizing his accomplishments in Columbus. It's just he has a lot more talent that he utilized in Ohio State. He's still a good coordinator. He still knows what he's doing. But what he did at Oklahoma State was by far more impressive to get them in the top 10 defensively in the Big 12 with a shootout type of conference, those type of offenses that are on the field for 2 minutes and they score 100 points a game. So to me, that's kind of what you're speaking to. Like, you have to have some level of success that brings in the talent. And then when you get the talent, it makes your job easy. And usually when you have that talent, the expectations skyrocket, right? Like James Franklin's dealing with that. He's dealt with it for a long time. You win 10 games a year and suddenly it's not good enough. So I think that's just something that they're going to battle with. And it's interesting. I agree with you. I think at some point you have to be able to develop, but at places like Penn State, it just becomes more about recruiting than anything else.
And maintaining where you're at. All right, Dustin, that is it for our show. Thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.